Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Head of the House, the leader in insight, information, and education in real estate, finance, lifestyle, and information. Hosted by Lewis Howard, your leading voice for the 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond. And now here he is, Lewis Howard.
Hey there, thank you, happy Saturday, and welcome to a new and latest fresh edition of Head of the House, streaming, of course, nationwide and around the globe. I'm your host, Lewis Howard. Thank you, Tom, for that awesome introduction, as always. We are excited to join you and bring you another special insight, preparation, skills, whatever you need to be the best in your life. You know, head of the house, really house is another word for life that I use. So really you're the head of your life. So whatever you're doing, you're being the best head of your life to make sure that you not only find your course, find your endeavor, but follow it and finish. You know, I've been into this thing about running a race. You know, we all have been into the recently into the U.S. soccer matches and World Cup and just awesome to watch and listen to everybody's excitement about how they're running the race to see who gets to the next round. But the question is, how are you running your own race? Did you know that you've got a race in your own life that you are running? How are you running your own race? How's your score? How's your competition? How's your decision? And that's really what I try to do, is really give you a thought to think about how you are running your race. Some of you are far ahead of me in your life financially, physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally. And so, you know, you're already doing your thing. So all I'm simply doing is being a vessel to bring you another thought or idea that might help you further along in what you're already doing. So today we're going to be talking about how big is your tank? How big is your tank for life? Right? Now, I've been recently listening to a mentor of mine. He's been teaching me some things, and one of the things he was sharing with about the Japanese fish called the hiranya. And it was in a friend of his tank that he went to visit, and he asked the owner, how big will the fish get? And the owner replied to him, it's 4 inches, it may grow to 12 inches. He goes, no, how big will it get? He goes, you don't understand. That fish, that Japanese fish, will grow as big as the tank that it's in. So if you put it in a 50-gallon tank, it will grow to 4.5, 5, 6 inches. You put in a 100-gallon tank, it grows 12 inches. You pull it in 200-gallon tank and so forth, you get what I'm saying. So that particular fish grows to the size of your tank. And I believe it's the same thing. We grow to the size of our dream. We grow to the size of our revelation, if you will, about our lives. We grow to the size of our vision. So the question that I have for you today that I really want you to think about is, how big is your tank? How big is your tank for life? How big is your tank for getting the things that you want to do in your life? How big is it, right? And, you know, I think about the tank of a car. If a car, you know, has a 22-gallon tank, well, when you fill that tank up, that's as far as you're going to get on that tank, right? So it really does come to is, how big is your tank for your life? Right? And so life is like that. And we're only big as the size of our dreams. We're only as big as our biggest thoughts. And so what I want to share with you some days today is some things that, you know, you can put in your memory bank and deposit in you and think about how big you are and how big your tank is, and really what determines the size of your tank as a human being. You know, for the Japanese hiranya fish, it's simply the size of the tank that we're swimming in. For you and I, we're a lot more mobile than that, so it is other factors that is going to impact how big our tank is, right? And the first thing that impacts your tank is How big is your vision? How big is your vision? How big is your dream? Right? Every day awake at night, or you wake up first thing in the morning, how big is that dream? Right? Is it a small dream, or are you just concerned about making the car payment on that nice car you got, or making the house payment? Is that the size of your dream? Because if that's the size of your dream, that's the tank that you're swimming in. That means that that's the jobs you're going to take, that's the opportunities you're going to take, that's the people that you're going to be with, right? You know, like attracts like. So if your vision is going to pay the bills and get by and cover your expenses and cover, if you got a business, cover your G&A, then that is your tank, right? And so if you are the leader of that tank, or you're the leader of that vision, then you are affecting everybody else around you in terms of how you think. I know small-minded people. They just don't think big-minded, and they don't want you talking big-minded around them. They don't like you talking about owning things that you don't have or being able to do things that you don't have. You know, they want to deal with the here and the now. So part of the challenge is when you are dealing with vision is that that's a very personal thing. Dreams are a very personal thing. So you have to be willing to stay patient with those dreams and stay patient with what you're believing, because it does grow you, it does expand you, and it does change you in terms of where you are getting to. So vision number one is vision, dream, you know, and really, you know, my suggestion is that if you don't write it down, it's not an idea. I'm in the habit now of writing down dreams and resolutions and thoughts so that I can have them as reference points. Why? Because life starts hitting you and pushing you around and stressing you out. You know, you don't have time to dream. Right? Baby's crying, kids have needs, they need to go to the soccer game or little league, or, you know, the wife wants to go and shop, or, you know, the husband wants to go and play golf, or the house needs to be repainted. You know the stuff. You know where I'm going. You get the stuff. And so you don't have time to dream because you're so busy living life. But the dream is life. Right? We don't make life a dream. The dream is the life. The vision is the life. Get the dream, get the vision, and then build the life around it. Don't start living life and try to build a vision around life, because you know what? It's never going to happen. Take it from me, it's never going to happen. You're going to always be ending up in the same boat. You've got to put that vision out there, and sometimes it's a little bit intimidating because you're not there. A vision is yet to come. It's something that's yet to unfold. And you may be, and you're going to be a multimillionaire, and you are $2 million in debt at this point. Right? Well, that's a challenge to your vision. What are you going to do? Are you going to give it up? Are you going to still believe it? You know, I'm glad that, as I've said before on the show, is I'm glad that Thomas Edison, I'm glad that Henry Ford, when they told Henry Ford that it was virtually impossible to make a V8, but Henry Ford saw a V8 engine in his mind. The scientists didn't see it. The laboratory professionals didn't see it. People that were more scholarly and erudite than Henry Ford did not see it. But Henry Ford saw that that was his dream, that he could make a car with a V8 engine. And he did that because he didn't give up on his dream. What do you have that life is pushing you to live in a small tank? Because it's telling you, you can't be that person. You can't be that actor. You can't be that actress. You can't be that president and CEO. You can't make $100 million a year, whatever the number is. You can't start that child book business that you wanted to start. Or you can't, you know, become the race driver. You're too old. You're too this. You're too that. And then we start to edit the vision to suit our current situation. And that's just wrong. You don't edit the vision to suit your current situation. You make your current situation man up, step up, and woman up, right? To the vision. So that's number one, determine how big your tank is. It's the size of your dream. Simply put, the size of your dream. The size of your dream tells how big your tank is. Number two is how you see yourself. This is probably most important. You know, one of the things that I've been managing over the past 7 years, especially through the recession, is coming from a high place where I'm a high place in my career and business, where, you know, I'm managing $100 million in revenue, and you know, I've amassed at least a net worth, a seven-figure, you know, net worth, and life is good. I can go in and buy what I want, sell what I want, pretty much. No limit, right? But then life changed. The recession came. Things change. Things start to fall apart. Now you have to ask yourself, who am I? How do I see myself? Am I seeing myself as a person that's in debt? Okay, I had a great, one of my other mentors said, he said, you know, we grew up, we were lower economic, but we were not low class. We wore the best that we could wear with our budgets, right? So just because you fall into a low place, you don't have to become that place. And for some reason, we believe that. We believe that if we fall into a low place, we suddenly have to become that low place. You don't have to become that low place. You don't have to see yourself that way. I know your collection agency might label you a deadbeat, right? You ain't taking care of your kids. You might be labeled that. You know, life can label you many different things, but you don't have to be there. It's not what they call you. It's what you answer to. Whatever you answer to, that's how you see yourself. If you answer to the call of a champion, then that's what you are. If you answer to the call of a loser, then that's what you are. How you see yourself. How you see yourself. No one has a skill that arrays a fish that it can grow to the size of the tank. It knows that. It sees itself. That it's got all programmed into that. But as human beings, we're so bombarded by things that are contrary to how we see ourselves. It's really sad to see friends and relationships stoop to such low levels because they don't have the value in themselves. You know, I hate it when I see young girls who are overdressing, to put it politely, themselves to look like women when they're just still young women. And they don't see themselves in that innocence and virtue that really a young woman ought to see. They're so busy trying to live that fast and quick life. Let me tell you, if any of you listen, you'll get there soon enough, and it will not be what you think it will be. So take your time and enjoy the time that you have. Be yourself. Be the right self. You know, and maybe you've gone through hiccups, and maybe you've had a failing in life. Maybe you've gone through financial struggle like I had to go through in the past. But you can still be a champion. You're still a winner. You see yourself that. Don't let your circumstances redefine who you are. Don't let your finances, don't let because you had to take a night job as a janitor redefine who you are. You're still an entrepreneur. You're still a business. You're still a person that can go out and make a difference. But only you have to see that. The name on the check, the company check, doesn't determine who you are. You determine who you are. And I learned years ago, sometimes you got to do what you don't want to do to get to where you want to be. That doesn't mean that you changed who you are. That means that you made the sacrifice. I admire mothers and fathers who make the sacrifice for their children to get to where they want to be. Because they see themselves as that provider and nurturer and that ability to get them there. So a question number two is how you see yourself. So we're talking about how big is your tank? How big is your tank for success? How you see yourself. Number one is having that vision. Number two is how you see yourself. You know, I've heard people say, you know, I'm just a little fish. Okay, well, if you see yourself as a little fish, then that's what you are. Right? So how do you see yourself? You really got to be honest with yourself. You can lie to everybody else, but you can't lie to yourself. And if you are lying to yourself, it's the worst person to lie to yourself. So sometimes we're uncomfortable with success, we're uncomfortable with riches, we're uncomfortable with goals, we're uncomfortable with thinking big. So we purposely see ourselves go smaller because that somehow that's more humble. Let me just tell you, it's not. You know, going for your dream is humble because it's something that's bigger than you. It's something that's going to take you to the end of yourself and beyond. You might be exhausted when you get there. But boy, I heard a guy say, you know, when I get to heaven, I want to have spent everything. I want to be broke when I get there because I spent everything on doing what I need to do. I think it's a great way to see yourself. And three is in understanding how big your tank is your ability to solve problems, right? You know, I believe that everybody has a certain gift, talent, and ability for their particular endeavor, for their particular call, their particular assignment, their particular mission, if you will. And part of that is finding a problem to solve, Did you know that most things that we enjoy come out of someone who found a problem and solved it? Let me take one example. The lamp came out of a couple who had cat hair always on their clothes, and they couldn't figure out how to get it off, and it was quite annoying for them. And so they took some scotch tape, took some 12-inch scotch tape and wrapped around it, and used that to take off the lint off their clothes. That's how we got the lint brush and the lint wrap. Okay? Something simple. A problem. Solve a problem, and now millions of people enjoy lint brushes, and there you go. So that's just one example of how problems identified by an individual can make a difference, not only in your life, those people are multimillionaires, but also makes a difference in other people's lives. Because, you know what? I got a couple of lint brushes. You probably got a lint brush of some shape or form. Okay. So most times when we look at the history of products and things that we enjoy, it's because there was a problem. You know, you may not think much of Henry Ford, but you know what? Would you prefer to still be riding a horse or driving a car? Okay? Because Henry Ford wanted to set the world moving faster via the automobile. That was a problem because the horses were slower. Going to town took a day sometimes. An automobile could do it in half the time. So he solved the problem by setting the world moving by automobile, creating the first assembly line to creating the automobile. So it's not just wise tales of folksy or a good idea. This is real stuff. So your ability to solve problems in your career and your sphere and your job and your home and your life really determines how big your tank is. How do you see a problem? Is something somebody else ought to deal with or something you should take? I love solving problems. The success in my career has been based on me being able to go and work with companies and teams to help them solve problems. And hey, I get paid in the process. So people will pay you to solve problems for them. So go find problems. You know, ask for solutions on those problems and figure out how to solve the problem. So that's how you determine how big your tank is. So when you look at some of the biggest people, they solve problems. You know, we elect people in the Western United States, particularly in the U.S., on their ability to solve problems. You know, we elect a Democrat or Republican because we believe they can go in and solve whatever the current problem is. Right? They don't always do, but we believe they can, so we put them in office. They'll say, you know, it's the economy, or it's health care, or it's taxes. Whatever it is, we elect them on that basis because we believe that they can solve the problem. How about in your own life? You know, can you solve your own family problems? Can you solve your own health problems? You know, a lot of health problems are self-inflicted. You're eating the wrong thing. Some of it's genetic that you can't do anything about, but you can do something about the donuts you put them out, right? You can do the amount of alcohol or beer or wine or whatever you consume that you're consuming to excess. You can do something about it. You can help yourself. What problem can you solve that's right around you right today that can start moving you in that direction? Momentum. Once you start solving one problem, you go to the next one, you go to the next one, so much. The next one, so can you solve problems? You work for a company. Is there a problem going on in the company that you might have the ability to look at and say, hey, you know what, I think I can help with that problem? Or do you say, you know what, it's not my job. I'm not getting paid for that, so I'm not going to do that. So your problem determines how big your time is. All right, you really manage transitions, okay? Life is for a transition. And a transition is a place where you've left some place, the door's closed, the opportunity's ended, and now you're in a place that you're not where you want to be or where you're aiming to be. You know, you might be unemployed. That's a transition. You might have health issues. That's a transition. You might have a divorce. That's a transition. You might be changing countries, moving from a country and in the process. So you're in transition and flying and moving and doing everything to transition. That's transition. So the key to determine how big your tank is, or success really is, how do you manage transition? And I have to tell you, a lot of people do not do well with transition because, number one, they want to avoid them. Okay? So one of the ways they do well in transition is simply avoid them. They don't want to go there. But there's power in transitions. There's change in transitions. You know, the caterpillar would not become the butterfly if it didn't go through a transition. Right? There's a time when it's neither a caterpillar nor is it a butterfly. It's in transition. So sometimes there is transmogrification in transition. There's change in transition. There's learning in transition. There's growth in transition. I can tell you from my own life, and I've been through 3 or 4 major transitions in my life, I've learned more through my transitions than I did through my success. My success was my success because of the transition. So what problems are you trying to avoid? What places are you trying to not do? You know, what talks are you trying to not have that might lead to some place that you don't go? Right? So let me tell you, avoiding the transition doesn't stop it coming. It comes anyway. It's just that you don't manage your problem. If you are charged with a crime, you're going through a transition. You're not in prison yet, but you're not free, because now you've got to answer the court for the cause. That's a transition. So how do you manage that transition? How do you defend yourself? How do you act in that transition? You know, you may be going to school for a career that you're not in yet, right? You're not in high school, but you're not in a career. You're somewhere in between. So we all go through transitions, whether we know it or not. You just have to pay attention to it and be mindful that managing it, okay? That doesn't mean you have all the answers, because sometimes in transition things are above you. It just means I'm going to manage how I do this thing. I'm going to manage how I feel. I'm going to manage my choices. I'm going to manage my decisions. I'm not going to let the thing get the best of me. You know, a lot of people did not manage well in the transition of the recession, because many people ran in hit. Many people resulted to crimes. Many people left their spouse. Many people left their companies. Many people just gave up. Many people left the earth, right? So transition can have different effects on different people. And we ought to not just write that off, because that's an important part of through the transition. Everybody wants to be a success. A lot of people want to be rich. They want to be famous. They want to be in Hollywood. They want to be on TV. They want to be on the sports media. Different things. But you have to learn that to go to that, you got to do something. You know, every championship player will tell you that they have to go through a period of transition. We did a show on Jeremy Lin here, and the transition that he went through as one of the first major Asian American NBA players, and how he was treated through the transition, and then it became a phenomenal sensation. So everybody goes through some sort of transition. It's about how you manage the transition that you All right, so we're talking about how big your tank is. So we've covered the vision, we've covered how you see yourself, and where you solve problems, and where you manage the transition. And wait for the right opportunity. You know, you have to be able to stand, and you have to be able to wait until the opportunity that's right for you. Now that goes back to number one, what's your vision? And you want to wait for the opportunity consistent with your vision, your mission. And you got to know what that is. That's why it's important to be clear on that. Because if you don't know what you're standing for, then you're probably not going to stand and wait. Right? If I stand in the corner and I don't know why I'm standing there, I'm probably going to, you know, go home. There are people standing in line, but they don't know what they're standing for. What are you waiting for? Well, I'm waiting for a job. And, well, what kind of job? Well, I don't know any kind of job. I just need to pay my bills. And, well, that's not much standing. And that's also a recipe to get off track. It's also a recipe for somebody to come along with the wrong idea, the wrong vision, the wrong idea, and lead you to a place that you don't want to be. It's not consistent with what, you know, where you ought to be swimming, right? And, you know, you're supposed to be swimming in an ocean, and you're swimming, you know, down in Louisiana with catfish. Right? Not where you're supposed to be. So you want to swim where you can grow the best and do the best. Where you have patience, and your patience is not waiting for the right opportunity. What I see myself doing, what I believe that I have. And I don't say no. Part of learning is learning the word no. And you have to say no a lot more than you have to say yes. And now, that's something I have had to learn, because I'm a type of yes person. I'm the optimist. I'm the salesman. I'm the salesman, right? But you can't say yes to everything, because not everything is consistent with what's going to take you where you want to. You know, ask a lot of people in your life what they've said yes to and which they've not said yes to. There's a lot of people that said yes to a spouse, and I said yes, and they asked me to marry him, right? They said yes to a job opportunity about 6 months later. I wish I'd not said yes. I wish I'd held out for something better, right? Because you don't really know what you said yes to your own inside, not the outside looking in. You can't always get the perspective there, but when you're on the inside, you get the perspective of what you really want. So having the patience to wait for the right yes, and the right situation, really how big your change is, how big the right opportunities grow you, all the opportunities. All right, so your ability to stand your ground is important. And we talked about that. It's sort of like right with place. Stand your ground. Stand for what you believe in. What do you believe? What principles do you believe in? What moral ethics and codes that you believe in? You know, in this day and time, people are afraid seeming to have moral ethics and codes that somehow there's some right-wing, conservative, off-the-wall kind of thing. But, you know, remember, morals and principles and codes, they guard your life. They keep people alive over the edge. They help you manage day-to-day life and choices and decisions. You can't tell your child that it's okay to do anything, right? You want them to have moral guards, moral ethics. You know, you can't go to your job and tell your employer you're going to just take a nap right in the middle of the day. You got certain procedures. You know what I'm saying? You can't get out of your car in the middle of rush hour of traffic and shoot it down and make it because you feel like it, right? So you got to have certain guards. Society has those for you so that we can sort of guard and remain civilized to some degree. So in your own life, you got to have, what am I starting for? Who do I believe in? You know, what's important to me? What would I trade my life for? You know, see, other people say, well, I'll trade my life for my kids. Okay, that's great. And it's that spec. You're the parent. You should. But what about your dream and your vision and the things that you have in your heart that matters at the end of your life that you'll look back on? Remember, we think forward, but we live backwards. Right? Most of the time when I'm looking at my life, I'm looking at what has already occurred and how I handle it and how I dealt with it. And when I find that I didn't run the race in such a way that you know, I didn't do well in certain circumstances. So, and we're always thinking the best forward sometimes. But really, life is when you look back and say, boy, how did I handle that talk? How did I handle that decision? How did I handle that choice? All right, so we got a couple more. The willingness to be generous. You know, part of how big your tank is for success is, are you a generous person? You know, are you open to give others opportunities? Are you open to share? And, you know, I remember when I was 6 years old, I was playing Grand Rapids over the roads. And anyway, where I grew up, we played that. And I remember these kids who were standing outside of the circle, and they didn't smell very good, they didn't look very good, they weren't dressed very good, so obviously they had a really challenged home life. And I stopped as we were going around the circle, just even as a young kid, and said, hey, you know what? Come join us. I didn't even ask the rest of the kid. I just invited them in. That's generosity. So don't think of generosity as money. Generosity is your kind efforts toward other people without any expectation or payback. You know, I don't know how I may have impacted that young lady and her brother's life that day. I never saw them again. But I'm certain that some impact is made. So when you refuse to be generous, you're having an impact. And when you choose to be generous, you have an impact. And it also just depends on your self-centeredness, your narcissism. You know, if you think everything is yours, then you don't want to share. But everything is not yours, because when you leave this earth, you don't take the house, the cars, the bank accounts, the money, the jewels. You don't take it with you. It stays here. So you might as well manage it while you're here, and part of the management of it is being generous. You know, there are people that have more money than they know what to do in their lifetime. They're never going to say no. Boy, try to give them to give a dollar away? No. They'll give it to cats and dogs, but they won't give it to human beings. Because somehow they think human beings are pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps and should not be paying for houses. They don't want to start a bad trend. Right? But generosity has nothing to do with it. You know, one of the things I appreciate about Bill Gates is his generosity with billions that he's given away. Warren Buffett, churches and charities. You know, Mother Teresa, her life was generous. She sat and hugged people that many of us would not touch, the lepers. Right? So generosity is beyond just economic bounds, its moral bounds, its reaching out to those who can't help themselves and lending them a hand, a kind word or deed. So I want to challenge you today, find somebody to be generous. Hey, pay for somebody's coffee in the line at Starbucks. That's been a popular thing for people to do, right? See a young person standing around, engage them in a conversation. You know, I try to do that. That's just generosity, it's letting people know you actually care. You know, get out of your routine for about 10 minutes. You know, let down the tinted windows and stop and say hi for a little bit. You're still going to be cool when the windows go up, but you've taken a moment to be generous to somebody outside of yourself. And don't expect anything back. Just do it, walk away, and you'll see how important that feature and benefit is in your own life. So the ability to be generous really says how big your tank is, how big of an individual you are, how big your dream really is, and how much you really care about things beyond your own goals and your vision. And, you know, going back to your vision should always include some provision for generosity, you know, some provision for giving and supporting and helping others, missions and things like that, because it shouldn't just be for tax purposes, because you need to lower your tax obligations, but it should be because you really and truly want to be generous to people. The willingness to last one is just to be willingness to think long term. You know, be a long putt player. So many people in life today are short putt players. They're just thinking about today. They're just thinking about their retirement. But did you know there's a generation that's going to come after you? If you have children or grandchildren, nieces or nephews, they're part of the next generation. What plans have you made for them? You know, I love people that long after they're gone, I was reading a story of Michael Jackson and the amount of wealth that he has accumulated since he has been gone, if you will, and he's still providing for his kids. Long after he's gone, they will continue for all the days of their life, they'll be provided for. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children and his children's children, right? So you got to be thinking long-term. What's your long-term plan? What's your succession plan? Beyond retirement, beyond your golden years. You know, I'm really thinking about generations and setting up things today, making sacrifices and decisions today to think about my children, their children, their children. And I want them to say, that guy, Grandpa, great-great-grandpa, Lewis Howard, I don't know who that guy was, never got a chance to meet him, but boy, he's made life a little bit easier for us, but we're able to go higher in our life because of the sacrifices that he made in his life. That's really what it is, because believe it or not, you know, a narcissist doesn't want to hear this, self-centered doesn't want to hear this, but you know what, life actually goes on after we leave. It still goes on. You know, I've lost great friends, and you mourn for a period of time, but you get up and life goes on. And you got to ask, what did that person leave? What sacrifices did that person make? You know, I wrap up with this story. I learned a great story from a friend of mine whose husband passed away. One of the legacies that he left, and now I do it, the legacy was that every time his daughters had problems, rather than trying to sit them down and talk to them, he wrote them a letter. And he would tell them, hey, it's going to be okay, don't be too hard on yourself, life will work out. And that's the way he communicated with his daughters, by writing these letters. And so at the memorial service, they read the letters. And it impacted me so that as part of his legacy, I write letters to my daughter at least once or twice a year. You're a parent, I want to encourage you to do that. Write a letter to your kid. It's hard to sit down and talk to them in this day and time. I mean, you know all the distractions, smartphone, computers, you know, internet, web, whatever, right? But everybody wants to read about me. Write them a letter and let them know what you really think and talk about the future. Talk about legacy. Talk about the stages that they are in life that you've already been in. That's hard to sit down in a conversation with you. If you can, boy, God bless you that you can do it. But most parents cannot do that. So I want to encourage you in making that decision to write a letter. Right? Write a letter to your loved one. Write a letter to a friend. Write a letter to your children. Let them know how valuable that you believe in them. And not an email. Write a personal letter. Don't send an email. Write a personal letter. Even if you got to use snail mail to get it there, you write a personal letter because that is a personal touch. Email has an impersonal letter to it. Hey, it's been another full show, and I'm so glad you tuned in. I'm so glad you told a friend about it and emailed it. Thank you for the 60-plus thousand people that have tuned in and listened to the show. We also got to welcome our listeners in from the Amazon platform, where my new books From Here to There are published, as well as my Inside the Mind of Champions. We're in 12 different countries. I thank Amazon for having a great tool that allows us to do that, and now we've been able to have the show up uploaded as part of Amazon's author network, so we'll go off the center as well as it will be on iTunes. We're waiting for the final approvals for an Apple Store to have Head of the House downloaded on iTunes. So thank you for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week on another edition of Head of the House. Hey, be the best CEO of your house in your life.